Hello, everybody, and welcome to Middle Age Geeks, where we aim to chat about everything and anything geek-related that tickles our fancy, be it movies, games, TV, tech, and comics. I know we always mention comics, but we've never referenced comics, so I think I've got to read Batman Year One for next week.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Remember we got that before the Batman movie, and I only found it there a few days ago, so I'm going to try and read that and tick the comic box on this show. But anyway, I'm one of your hosts, Daz, and this is my other host, my co-host, Phil. How are you doing, Philly?
I'm good, man. Yeah, pretty good. I have been reading some comics. I've been reading New Avengers. Yeah, yeah. So because New Avengers was different volumes, and the first one came out in like 2005 or something, so I figured I'd go back and read that. I remember reading the start of it. I never finished the first volume. I said, fuck it, I'm going to go back and read it. So I've just started reading that again. Really cool. Love the way it's inked. It's good. But I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good.
Happy
days. How are you getting on yourself?
Very good indeed. Very good. Getting ready to get stuck into some more 99 content this week. For anyone listening for the first time, this is the third episode in our four-episode Party Like It's 1999. Look back at some 1999 movies and games. And we will also get into some news and feedback, and then Phil will take us on a nice deep dive back to the 1999 classic Office Space. And after that, I'll take you back to a genre-defining game, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. But first up, some hot news off the press. Well, it's not hot news. It's been around for a few days now. It was Super Bowl Sunday last week, and as always, a few trailers drop. But the biggest trailer of all, obviously, was Deadpool 3. Which was a teaser trailer, but there was still quite a good bit in the trailer. I know you caught it. What were your thoughts on
it? Yeah. Oh, it looks class. I mean, I love those movies. Deadpool 1 and 2 are just fucking, they're just great fun. You know, it's one of those roles where the actor is kind of born to play that part, you know.
Absolutely, yeah.
He's absolutely fantastic. And I love that they're apparently great mates off screen as well. So I'm sure a lot of that will transfer over. No, I'm excited for it. You know, it's cool. I mean, I know you didn't watch Loki, but all the TVA stuff in the trailer, you know, that's Loki.
That's referenced
So that'll be that's going to be cool. I mean, to see just how meta and how fourth wall breaking they go with it. You know, today,
like,
I'm hoping they don't push it too far. You know,
True. I mean, the trailer did lap it on pretty heavily with the 20th Century Fox logo in the background crumbled in one of the scenes. But the quote of the entire trailer was Marvel Jesus. So I think the references to the shit show that Marvel is kind of at the moment will be fantastic, that it'll be just self-referential. And I'm here to pick up the pieces from your cinematic universe that's falling apart. That comes out later this summer, I think. Also, we got, I think it was just yesterday, the casting of Fantastic Four with Pedro Pascal as Mr. Fantastic, Reed Richards, then Vanessa Kirby, Josh Quinn, and Ebon Moss Bacharach as the Thing. Now, you were telling me, Josh Quinn, like, is
Joey
Stranger Things?
It's Joey Quinn.
Joey Quinn. It's Stranger Things, that's the only thing that you know him from, right?
That's the only thing I know him from. Yeah. I'm sure he's probably in a bunch of shit, but that's all I know him from.
Because I didn't even see that season that he was in. So,
You have to watch it, man. And he's
really,
obviously, he became this just cult classic character. You know, straight away, everybody loved him. You know, he's it's a great season. Definitely worth watching.
Yeah, must give it a go. And Ebon Moss, I don't know him from anything actually. So it's kind of interesting casting.
He's been in a good few stuff. I think he's in what's that one called? The Bear. And
TV show, that's on the list for us to watch. We still haven't watched it.
And did you not watch The Punisher?
No, I watched the first episode, but then I never watched that.
But he's in The Punisher as well, so there's another one for you to watch. You missed the really good Marvel, some of the really good Marvel stuff.
It'll be interesting. It's 2025 for Fantastic Four. It'll be good to see them revisit the that world, because it's next year will be 10 years since Josh Trank's Fantastic Four, that ill-fated thing. And actually, just when I was preparing for this, I looked back just to see what he had done following that, because he very publicly came out and said the studios fucked up his movie and tore it apart and this and that and reshoots. And he pretty much never worked again. I think he did that Capone movie with, what's his name? Can't remember his name, but yeah, he just did that in 2020. And that was the only movie he's done. So he's like just been blacklisted. So yeah, looking forward to get back into Fantastic Four. So before we get to what we've been playing and watching, we have some feedback that we got over the last few weeks, but just didn't get time to get into it. First up, we have Mark from Dublin, who got in touch to say he loved our Alien review. It was like 3 or 4 episodes back. And said that the first time he saw that movie, he saw it at home. And towards the end, like, he turned it off when Ripley got back to the whole, to the ship, and just thought, you know, that's it and whatever. And it wasn't fucking, like, back then, it wasn't for years until someone mentioned it. And they kept mentioning a moment, and he's like, what are you talking about? All these quotes, he didn't know what the hell they were talking about. And he just asked, did we ever leave towards the end of a film or miss the beginning of a movie? Did you ever leave cinema halfway through?
I remember walking in late to one not that long ago by accident. I think there was one where, because I had a thing of just not wanting to see trailers. I just tried to avoid them because it's so sick, and then they've gotten to the point where movies were being ruined. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's so much. So I was like, no. So I was kind of judging it. I knew that the cinema had like 25 minutes. So I would just cut in at the last few minutes before, and I was a fucking dab hand at it. But I went to see something. I think it might have been, Winter Soldier or Civil War or something like that. And when I arrived in, for some reason, they'd either done no trailers or whatever, or they'd just cut the trailers short. But I came in, I'd missed the whole start of the movie. Like, fuck's sake! So that was the end of me.
Yeah.
Skipping. Yeah. But no, I try not to. Like, I mean, I do it at home now. You know, if I'm watching a new movie and it's come out on Netflix or whatever it is, I watch it.
I just chew it off.
But yeah, no, I try not to walk out of the cinema. I think it's kind of, it's kind of a ceremony thing of going to the cinema now. You know, it's my happy place. So I do my best, and you pay your money, and you gotta
sit through it. And if you make a poor choice, then that's on you. You gotta sit through it. Like Spider-Man 3, obviously, came close to leaving Tree of Life, Terrence Malick's movie. I was bouncing off that about 20 minutes in. But they tested my patience. But I once went to, I think it was, The Da Vinci Code, Tom Hanks, and went with a group of people for the first time ever, and someone else bought the tickets and they were late. So we were 20 minutes late. I was that guy, you know, going in 3 rows from the front. Sorry. People fucking 20 minutes into their movie. That was embarrassing. Like, so yeah, I was the opposite of you for years. Like, if I missed the trailers, or if I knew I was going to miss the trailers for a movie, I wouldn't go. I'd go, fuck it, no, I'll get the next one because I want to see all the trailers. That's before they showcased every single fucking thing in the trailer. But Simon also from South Dublin asked if we were looking forward to the Oscars, and he said he struggles to see enough movies to actually know who should win. But this year, obviously, with Cillian Murphy, his performance, and poor thing's been nominated for a lot of things, he said he's definitely going to stay up to catch them. And I would echo his thoughts in terms of last few years. I'd say the last 2 or 3 years, I haven't actually watched the Oscars after watching them since I can remember. Always staying up. But with Cillian Murphy there, and to see Christopher Nolan hopefully take home Best Director, I'll definitely be trying to watch. But definitely try to watch them. But like, years gone by, you know, you'd be watching so many movies that you'd know all the best pictures. You'd have seen pretty much everything bar very obscure movies. It would get to the point where I'd have seen so many of the movies that you start checking out the, you know, the best nominated international documentary or something to see. Where now it's, if I get 5 out of 10 best picture movies seen, I'm fucking happy, you know. How about yourself?
Yeah, no, I watch it and I try to see as many of them as possible. There has been some years in the recent ones where I'm like, fuck, man, I've seen 3 of these movies or something, you know. But I think that I think it's because we're kind of in that, I know people talk about a golden age of television being past, you know, when we had Wire, Breaking Bad or whatever that kind of stuff is. But we're still in an age of fucking all, you know, incredible shows coming out constantly that, I would have made more of an effort to maybe go to the cinema before, because that's the great stuff that's available for me to watch was in the cinema, Oscar bait stuff. Whereas now, if I'm sitting at home and it's like, okay, well, there's a 10 episode streaming thing of this incredible show with fucking A-list celebrities in it, I can just as easily watch that. There's so much content out now that there is, even for me, I don't have two kids. there's too much content for me to fucking consume.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if I'd ever get to the point where I'll see every fucking Oscar thing unless we start getting paid to review these things, you know, then maybe I'll do it. But I have seen a bunch of them obviously this year. So I'm obviously fingers crossed for Cillian Murphy. I've seen incredible performances, but just the performance in that is just fucking mind blowing. So
yeah, absolutely. Okay, so now let's get on to what we have been playing and watching this week. Philly, have you been catching anything interesting?
So it's just, I'm on the last boss on Kena, and I got beaten a couple of times. So I was like, I'll just play something else. So I bumped the difficulty up to hard because I do that with most games. Most games I'll start on hard, and if it gets too bad, I'll drop it down. But it's just this particular one, the bosses are challenging on normal, but the regular enemies that, you know, the bunch of enemies that spawn are all, they rarely get a hit on you. You know, maybe the flying ones or might get a hit if your timing is off. But for the most part, they come at you almost one by one. You know, it's a piece of piss, and then the bosses are challenging. So there's too much of a disparity. Mm. So I upped it to hard to kind of make the little guys more of a challenge so I could drag more out of the game. But of course, that made the bosses so much fucking harder. But I'm on the last boss. Just, he's fucking deadly. So I'm kind of, I'll come back to that. But the only other game I played was the one with yourself, Helldivers 2, and online. And man, that is a lot of fucking fun.
It's incredible.
I love that. The humor in it is just so on point with something like, as you said, RoboCop or Starship Troopers. That kind of it's spot on with that kind of stuff. And they're just all about American, the patriotism and the stuff they're yelling out while you're shooting and blowing stuff up. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's over the top. It's so much fun. The music is amazing. The gunplay is amazing. It's really easy to just jump in. Like, myself and yourself are playing, and it's just, you're down on the planet, you run around. You can take as long as you kind of want to finish it. I mean, the longer you take, obviously, the less points you get, but you kind of go down it's not too, the enemies aren't overwhelming, but sometimes you can get just enough to keep you on your toes. You know, I'm really enjoying it. Yeah.
Yeah. If you take your eye off the ball, you can be surrounded very quickly and demolished. But yeah, I'm loving that so much more than I thought. Like, it's taken over pretty much everything else. And I love the way you can just, as you say, it's so easily accessible. You can just whack on the PS5 and then within a minute, you're in a game, either solo or with three others online.
I felt that was actually so seamless, wasn't it? Joining your game was just, I remember trying to do that even recently. What was the last game we played online? Might have been Aliens Fireteam.
Yeah.
And it just took ages, loading screens, all this kind of stuff.
What is happening? Are you
whereas
in
this
nowhere?
Was just it was like a snap. I was on your ship and off we went down, fucking blew up a bunch of alien bugs. Fucking deadly.
Yeah. And it's, I love it, like, when you can play with three others. If you're not playing with a mate on voice chat, it's nice you can play with other people and you don't have to, like, because it can get very tactical as well, but you don't have to have your mic on and chatting to fucking strangers, because in this day and age, more often than not, it's just somebody with their microphone on and they're just chatting away to their fucking mum or something. It's just like, fucking shut up, turn it off. Like, but back in the day, you know,
So that's the thing, actually, just on that, because I'm not sure if an update has done since, but the PlayStation mic, you used to have to press the button to mute it. Like, it was automatically on. Mm. I remember playing, I decided, because I'm fucking terrible at poker, as you well know, but I decided I wanted to practice a little bit. And so I went on to Poker Now or Poker Stars.
Yeah.
And I was playing on there, you know, and I didn't realize I was saying that I didn't know the mic was on. And I was sitting there going, oh, fuck, I have nothing here. Please fucking fold. Please fold. Please fold. And then your man just talks back. He's like, we can all hear you, dickhead. I'm not folding. He's like, fuck, shit, man. I was like, that thing should be on mute by default, and I should have to unmute it. Fuck's sake, man.
Oh, that's fucking brilliant. But that game, for anyone that's on the fence about it, it's fantastic. So on PC and PS5. Have you been playing anything else or watching anything else?
I've kind of actually started season two of Bosch Legacy, which is, do you ever watch Bosch, the show that was on Amazon? Mm-hmm. Titus Welliver, Welliver?
I know the guy, yeah.
Yeah, no, he's good. It's a decent cop show. So watch that, and then some true crime stuff I was watching on Netflix, but nothing massive. I didn't get to the cinema in the end, which is strange for me to miss a week in the cinema. I just didn't fancy the weekend. But I am going to go and see the what's being horribly reviewed, Madame Web, this week, because I just have to, for curiosity.
Yeah, I think I might have to try and join you for that one. It's getting fucking pounded online to the point where you kind of have to go and see it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fucking brilliant. But what else have I been playing? I finished, this might be spoilery, maybe not spoilery, for Suicide Squad. Not really. And fuck it if it is, because you shouldn't be playing the game anyway. It's rubbish. But yeah, the end boss, when you get to the end boss, and it's kind of in the trailers, Brainiac is controlling the Justice League, and you kill him and all is well and good. And I think I mentioned this to you already, that you then beat him, but then it turns out there's 13 more of him in the multiverse. And it's like, oh my God, is this how you're padding out the game? It's lame. And just, but I played along, and every single time I managed to get like three or four more versions of him killed, but you have to do the exact same thing in every single world that's a mirror of yours, exact same enemies, exact same place, to obtain this loot, to buy the missions. This game is fucking absurd. To buy the missions in another world so you can beat them again and then get coins from the next world. And it's like, fuck off, the lazy ass. That. Like, you've not been working on this game for 9 years and this is your end game content. It's, if you think of like Helldivers in terms of how to do a co-op 4-player shooter compared to, Suicide Squad, kill the Justice League, they can go and fuck themselves if they think I'm finishing that. It's atrocious. But then I jumped into the demo of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
That's an absolute, that's a prick tease. I couldn't go in and just do the start of the fucking thing and have to leave it till it comes out at the end of the month. Fuck that. I'll wait till the end of the month and get it.
So, I jumped in and I even watched replays the first game for you so you know where you are. And even after watching that, I've no fucking idea what's going on. I've absolutely no idea what's going on in the story. The characters you're playing as a new guy, that silver haired guy the demo, and combat seems cool. It seems great, but I'm completely at a loss. And it just didn't grab me at all. I'm sure if the game comes out and I have time, I'll play it. But just absolutely lost. And I'll wait to hear your thoughts when the game comes out. But
I'm sure I'll be getting stuck in it, right?
Yeah, 100%. And then, just through Detective Season 4, Episode 5, watched that last night. And it's one of those, myself and my wife looked at each other and said, there's only one more fucking episode. We got that sinking feeling that I don't think it's going to end. The ending is not going to do the series justice.
Wrap it up in one episode, then?
Kind of going with one episode. And there's so many things to wrap up. And there's this supernatural element and the horror element. And a lot of that just gets kind of sidetracked in Episode 5. So unless it's a 90-minute episode or something like that, but it's still great. Show's great, but I worry about the last episode. But that is what we have been playing and watching this week. So now it is on to our movie review from 1999. Party Like It's 1999. So it's over to Phil, and he'll take us through Office Space.
Cheers, Daz. Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing this one. I know we mentioned all the incredible movies that are out and were out in 1999. And this one maybe isn't everybody's top of everybody's list, but for me, it stands out just because, I think it stands out just because of a lot of things, like being Mike Judge's first time directing, and I think it could easily get lost in that year of incredible movies. And for me, it did. It was actually a few years later when I saw this. So it was a good friend of ours, Jenny, who was saying to me, look, you have to watch this. And we ended up watching it together. And I was just, how did I let this pass me by for whatever it was, like 5 years or 6 years? So I think it came out 25 years ago, to the day of this episode coming out, the 19th of February, it came out.
That's so cool.
And it was based on like a set of short stories by Mike Judge called Milton. So people might judge from the likes of Beavis and Butthead and King of the Hill. Yeah. And I think he actually did another, and he was directed two movies this year, because I'm pretty sure he directed South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut as well.
Oh, wow.
And that, yeah, I think I'm pretty sure that came out in 1999 as well. But this was the first live action piece he'd done. And you know, it's his best work. I know some people like Idiocracy and stuff, but I think this is his best thing. And despite that, like, it actually had a pretty modest return in the box office. Like, it became a cult classic, like a lot of these movies do. Mm. But like, the budget was low. It was only 10 million, but it only made 12 million worldwide. Like, wow. It actually made more on home video sales than it made while it was in the cinema. And people, it just blew up then, you know. And it was actually Mike Judge blamed some of it on. He hated the poster for the movie, which I love it. I think the poster is amazing. The dude just covered in all post-its. Yeah. I think it's really striking.
Why do you hate it?
Really good. But I think he thought maybe it didn't tell the story of the movie. So like, when they released it on, when they were doing the promos for the VHS home release, they made a poster that had that same thing of the guy in the post-its, but it had Stephen Root's character Milton kind of poking all around the corner, and because obviously Milton was the name of the short stories that this was based on, you know. But you know, it got me thinking that you and I would talk about this the odd time with movies like, say, Blade Runner, which I know was much older, but this was reviewing really well at the time. Like, to only pull in 12 million on a 10 million sale, like, it reviewed well enough to make more than fucking 12 million.
It's so strange.
Something, I mean, like, you think about that's what I think of Blade Runner. I know it's a different, you know, it's a different story, but Blade Runner is the same again. Blade Runner this time was an established IP because of the first movie. It's fucking Denis Villeneuve and all that kind of stuff. I think I go, this is going to be fucking amazing. And yet again, it wasn't a flop, but it didn't do anywhere near as well as you would expect. And I wonder, do people just not read reviews or what?
It's strange. I mean,
so
like,
well, critically and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, 1999 was so stacked, you're kind of like, is that a factor that there was just too many good movies? Because so many good movies, like Being John Malkovich and, as we're saying, Fight Club and stuff, they didn't make as much money as they should have. But I mean, Office Space was so relevant. Well, it's so relevant all the time, you know, especially back in 1999, you know, coming up to Y2K and all that kind of stuff. And that, that sterile kind of workplace, that was very much the norm back then, before all the fucking beanbags and colored offices and, like, you know, happy Google shit we have now. But it's so straight, like, 12 million, that's really fucking low, like.
Well, look, I won't keep moaning about my box office gripes. We'll jump into it. So the basic synopsis is that Peter, played by Ron Livingston, is like a computer programmer, and he's, you know, all day he faces insults from his boss. He feels like his life is horrible. And then, you know, he decides he's going to meet a hypnotherapist to get rid of this work stress. It's been pushed on him by his current on and off again girlfriend, pushes him to go and see a hypnotherapist. And when he goes, a tragedy takes place at the clinic. And that's the kind of basic synopsis that we're given. But it expands into so much more of that you actually get to see inside the office. It's a cool 90 minutes, which is great. You know, it's a nice short movie. It's fucking, doesn't stay around too long. It's a really enjoyable watch. We get the start off of what Peter's day is like before we get into the hypnotherapy stuff. We see him going in, and it's just like your typical office job and all these annoying characters. And you automatically get that, you know, feeling. I know you didn't work in too many offices, but it's that same. I wonder, did you get that same vibe watching it as the printers are breaking. It's the same repetitive day. It's cubicles. It's the same annoying person from whatever fucking department, you know, and he's just getting shit over like a memo that's fucking pointless, but people are making a big deal out of this office bureaucracy. Did you see this back in 1999 when it came out?
No, I think I saw it in 2000, but I saw it. It's actually quite, not so much pivotal, but it does lead into our meeting actually in a way, because it ties into our friendship a little bit. Sorry?
You were working in an accountancy office. Absolutely,
working in the accounts department of a company, like studying accounts. And this movie was kind of writing that narrative for me. Like, I didn't work in cubicles like this in the movie. And I don't know if there were like that in anywhere in Ireland. Those cubicles where they completely, like, they just, you're in your own little box. You can't fucking see anybody. When I was working in an office, you know, you're at a desk, but you know, you can see the people around you, you can interact with them and all that kind of shit. But yeah, during, I worked there for about 10 months and I knew, yeah, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing with my life. Like, but at that point it was all kind of cozy and, you know, you kind of knew everyone. There was no one too annoying. But then like in that fucking company, those middlemen, kind of one of those guys came into the office to increase productivity guys, you know, and the comment that he came over to me and say, because I was like, a lot of my stuff was kind of target based or report based. So it wasn't, you're not really wasting time because if you get stuff done, that's your stuff done, you know, your reports and all that shit. But he said to me, he said, you're doing a lot of kind of getting coffees and stuff for people, maybe just a little bit too much. That I was just like, what? So yeah, basically saying, going around asking if I'm getting a coffee, he was saying, maybe just, you know, you don't have to ask everyone if they want a coffee. It's like, well, the fuck has that got to do with fucking anything?
Nice,
yeah. Fuck you, you prick. So yeah, that was the kind of catalyst that just really took me aback. Just like basically, oh, go fuck yourself and fuck this place. And yeah, 2 weeks later, I left and went to Egypt for a few weeks and then came back and was like, fuck that office shit. What do I want to do? Yeah, and basically like the premise kind of this movie, but like, I don't know what I want to do in my life, but I know what I don't want to do, and it's fucking that shit. So it's like, what am I interested in? Yeah.
It's one of the lines in the movie, humans are not meant to sit in cubicles. Like, that's
exactly. You know, so I just got a job then in a video game store because I like video games. That's where we met. So yeah, this movie is definitely a catalyst for some serious change, which I imagine was for a lot of people that were kind of stuck in that rut.
Yeah, but I mean, unfortunately for me, I kind of ended up, like, obviously I work in an office still, despite working as a therapist as well. So I do still have some office work. And luckily, I very much enjoy the way everybody is now working from home. But yeah, I've had that life and I've been in an office that was the cubicles, all the rest of it, the people from certain departments who are just like, what is even the point of you being here? You're doing a nothing job, you know? And that's kind of the characters we get introduced to then as we get into it. Like, we kind of get the ones that we like. The young kid who's unfortunately named Michael Bolton, who people keep making comments on. Then there's, the Indian guy, Nai Nanajer, and everybody keeps fucking mispronouncing his name the whole time. And then Gary Cole, who's just fantastic as Lundberg, the boss, you know. And like, that's the guy you probably, even if you haven't seen the movie, you've probably seen the meme a million times of him with a coffee cup, you know, that'd be great. And that'd, I think, maybe my favorite in it is Stephen Root as Milton. You know, he seems like possibly the character seems like maybe today he'd probably be diagnosed as like neurodivergent or something along those lines. Yeah. But he's just walked on. He looks like a guy who's about to break, and you know, and you see him, he's muttering under his, people keep pushing him, taking his stapler, all this stuff, and he's muttering under his breath, like, I'll just have to set the building on fire. And he's been working there for five years, like was let go 5 years ago, but is still working there because someone forgot to take him off payroll. So he just kept coming in and kept getting paid.
He's great.
And actually, it was really interesting. You know, the running joke in it where it's his stapler, and his stapler gets taken off him by Gary Cole. And that stapler was actually just a prop made by the props department. There was no red stapler by that particular stationery company. Yeah. But it became such a big cult thing because of this movie that they ended up making, the company made a red stapler and released it just because, so people just had them just because it was from the movie.
Kudos. That's great.
It's actually, though, I was thinking there is a joke very early on in it that we, just to touch on what we said about Fight Club last week, we mentioned that, or you mentioned that there's the joke about the mass shooting, a guy going to the office, i.e. Ed Norton, might have been a massive issue. And we're only a few 10 minutes into this movie, and we get one of those jokes. You know, he's just like, Ron Livingston is just like, you know, one of these days I could just come into the fucking office, and just makes the sign of holding a machine gun. And of course, this came out in February, and the awful events of Columbine didn't happen until later in the year. So we kind of, as he does that particular thing, that's how we get to see Jennifer Aniston for the first time. She's this girl who goes and she works in this place they go for breakfast, a restaurant nearby, which is great. Like, what a great get Jennifer
Aniston
for this.
She was in the prime of Friends.
She was, 5 years into Friends?
5 years into it,
yeah. So absolute fucking superstar. Who wasn't obsessed with Jennifer Aniston in the 90s?
And to think of a movie starring her as well, you know, she's built on it and still, you know, as we're talking about box office, it's definitely quite strange. Mustn't have been marketed pretty well then. Must have been a bit of a marketing disaster. It'll have to be.
Yeah, it must have been, yeah. Or people were just like, wait, Mike Judge, the Beavis and Butthead guy? No, I'm not into it.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know. But I love they're kind of at the start and it like, leads into his shitty life, shitty job. Is that this line that the people keep saying to him? He's like, I get the feeling that she's cheating on me. And the people that he's talking to are like, yeah, I get that feeling too. Like, what the fuck? What kind of thing is that? What do you mean by that? Like, and yeah, he has his shitty apartment with the thin walls. Lives next door to Dietrich Bader, who I think is great in this movie. I think there's loads of little small roles in this movie that are great. He's this guy who works construction. He just doesn't give a bollocks about anything and just seems like a good dude, but just a waster who lives next door. But anyway, as I mentioned in the synopsis, he decides to go to hypnotherapist to make him super calm. And when he goes in to do it, the therapist ends up having a heart attack and falls down, and he never gets the chance to snap his fingers to kind of bring him out of it. So he's just left in this super, you know, relaxed, doesn't care about anything phase. Yeah. And as someone who suffers from anxiety, I was so jealous. I was looking at the calm on his face going, oh man, if only what I would give for a hypnotherapist to fall over dead in front of me. But it's a really good scene where your man just fucking falls over.
Yeah.
Then it's just, it's just where it goes from there. He's just a completely changed man. You know, he's ignoring calls from work. He's not showing up when he's supposed to work at the weekend. His girlfriend fucking calls and tells him she cheated on him. He just doesn't care. And it also helps him to go and ask out Jennifer Aniston. You know, when he goes into the office and he's just so, he's just completely different man. Did you enjoy his performance in it? Because I loved it. I loved the change from how uptight and wound he was to
the way he was
sitting in that restaurant. And it's just, it's brilliant. He
embodies like the fantasy that you would have in that scenario about just fucking sticking the finger up to middle management, up to the man, to these wanker bosses and all these boring ass jobs. Like, just big fuck off, you know. Jesus Christ, like yourself, Phil, we've worked in offices and stuff like that, but even working in retail, you know, when the customer's always right, that just comes into play where you just want to just go, oh, fuck off, man. Or just the way he just starts, you know, taking his desk apart and just sauntering into work. And it's just, he's perfect. And he plays that. We talked about Tom Hanks before in The Green Mile. He played like, Ron plays the everyman so perfect. He's so relatable.
Yeah.
Plays it so understated. But his shift is just so believable. Like it's, I think it's fantastic.
He's aged. He's aged incredibly well. Like if you look at him in, say, The Flash when he plays Barry's dad in The Flash, like fucking hell, how is that 25 years on you, man? Like fucking hell, he looks great. Obviously, takes care of himself. I think it's like as I said, the kind of cause he's so the stress is completely released. He's able to go and ask out the girl that he would have been so nervous to ask out before, because now he's like. He says yes, she says yeah. She says no, she says no. You know, that's it. Which is, you have to take your shot. And it's just, there's obviously a great message there as well. Don't fucking stop caring about everything and going to work like a dickhead. But also, why sweat the little things? He goes in and actually asks her, and she says yes. What's the worst she could say is no, you know? And I just, I love that, because you mentioned last week how quotable and relatable Fight Club is still to this day. But I think that this is even more relatable because of
absolutely
cause offices and stuff are still the way we are. These kind of acting, these kind of little almost cliques that are in the office that people form, you know, the fucking minutiae, the micromanaging is all still there. Whereas say Fight Club at the time, it was amazing and it's anti-establishment and there's all these great quotes. The problem is that there's so many dickheads out there now that just put those kind of quotes on a meme on Instagram and kind of just stuff like this, you know, your stuff that you own ends up owning you. It's like, I could see that with someone with a picture of a, you know, I don't know, fucking Grim Reaper and they stick it up and they think they're being edgy on Instagram, you know, and I've seen so much of that over 25 years that when I go back to look at Fight Club, it takes a little bit of the edge off. But I think with office, like, I don't want to say community, but that kind of insular kind of environment, the office environment is captured so well in this, and it is universal and universal in jobs in Central. Like it kind of You see Jennifer Aniston in her restaurant job, and it's the same with her. Like, she eventually tells her boss to go fuck himself, who was actually played by Mike Judge. And you know, it's the same thing, the way he talks to her, and it just shows, it's just that kind of mundane management. There has to be more than life, more to life kind of thing of it.
It's the kind of everyone that I guess can tap into that situation, or the situation comedy of this movie as well, that sheer frustration of working in a place like this, or something like this. You know, it's sterile, boring, fucking meaningless, but it's that whole thing of that rinse and repeat, that cycle, when from his commute in the morning, and it almost echoes falling down, but not as severe, but it's just that monotonous it's a little bit more playful, but just moving a few meters at a time in your car to go into the, when he gets to the office, and the dread when he's just looking at the door because he knows he's going to get a static shock off the fucking door handle, and just that kind of shit. But living for the weekend and counting the hours until fucking 5:30, working in a place you hate, and just kind of like work, you know, you get up, work, eat, shit, sleep, and just fucking do it again. It's just mind numbing, and it's this movie just plays it and gets you into the scenario so quickly with that TPS report, with the way, like, it's not overplayed. It's just, you know, that cover letter, you know, and he's just like, yeah, no, it's fine. Didn't go out. I put the cover in. I just forgot. I'm just like, yeah, okay. Just don't do it again. It's just like, it's fine. And then someone else, another boss comes over and tells him, and he's
the
just,
exact same thing.
He sells it with his eyes. You just, that, like, he's screaming inside, but he's just like, yeah, no, it's fine. You know, and that's, we've all been there with bosses where you're just like, yeah. And it's this power trip going on with these fucking wankers. Yeah, and you're just like, you got to say the right things, tick the boxes.
Yeah.
And they're just humiliating you.
Deviated from procedure just ever so slightly.
I just forgot. Like,
that's too much. He's like, there's no issue. There's no issue here. It's fixed. It hasn't gone out yet.
And they're just pushing it to breaking point without cracking you, you know?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it's there's a great line when he just said, like, he's talking about his job, and this is after he's had the hypnosis, and he's just like, it's not that I'm lazy, you know, when I go into the job, it's just that I don't care.
Yeah.
And like, who has fucking felt that? Like, we're just, it's actually not that I'm lazy, because I, when I put my mind to something, I fucking go all out, and I put a lot of emphasis on the details and stuff. But when it comes to something like this, I just don't care. That's why, you know.
And you could see everyone kind of, in the scenario like that is, as we're talking about breaking point, where you got like Samir when he's, that's my favorite part in the whole movie, when his like anger whispers to the fucking printer. It's just fucking hell. Like,
but the stuff with the printer is amazing, man. I work in an office now still, you know, and it's still, we've still got fucking issues with the printer, and it's still the same. Oh, is that the middle printer as well? Acting the bollocks again. You know, it's still a fucking thing. Like, it's just, and that printer just winds them all up. You're fucking cursing at it, and fucking, it's just,
I mean, like, brilliant. Most of the printers I've smashed have been, luckily, in my own home, and I've gone through about 6 or 7 of them. I know, if I just, like, it's that thing, if I just spend more on a printer and get one for like $200 or $300, then it won't be a problem, but I'm just, you'd be scared to death that it is a problem. But just why is it such of a fucking off topic, like, but, well, not off topic, but why do you have to print instructions to get it to connect to your phone so you can connect back to it, then to download an app to tell you the printer is missing? It's like, and if it's missing, then, you know, just use the cable that comes with it, that proprietary fucking cable that from the mid 1990s, that square USB fucking thing. It's like, are we still using that on fucking printers? God.
Next time you're smashing a printer, we got to film it in slow mo while playing that song.
100%.
Slow mo, smash the shit out of it. But,
absolutely.
But yeah, we're kind of, that they've, during near the start of the movie, we get introduced to, John C. McGinley, him and Paul Wilson have come in, and their job is like, they're like consultants that come in to help streamline things. And basically that just means downsizing. It means firing people. And despite the fact that Ron Livingston, Peter, has been slacking off, he's just been coming in late, eating at his desk, playing Tetris and all this kind of stuff, they just think that it's just so refreshing to hear someone not try to justify the job. He's so fresh and honest. They're like, oh my God, he's obviously a genius. He's just not being challenged. And so they blame management for him. No. Not only is he slacking off, is he not fired, we're going to look at giving him a promotion.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's just so fucking clueless from these people that are, you know, and it's just, doesn't matter what level you are, it's just the same fucking shit, you know? But it's gas. As he's going around and he's taking off the extra wall on his cubicle so we can look out the window and all, I just noticed they're playing Damn It Feels Good to Be a Gangster, which is another Ghetto Boys song.
Oh, yeah.
It's really weird. Like, it's they're playing the clean version, you know, so they're taking out the fucks and the shits and all that kind of stuff. But they've left in the N-word.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's such a weird version of a song to leave in the N-word, but take out all the Fs. It's so weird. But yeah, like I suppose back to Stephen Root, because I'd love to spend some more time on him and his performance. Like they just keep pushing him. You know, they're storing boxes in his cubicle. They're taking a stapler. It talks about they keep moving his desk. He doesn't get a piece of the birthday cake. And you can just see it. You're waiting for him to crack and lose it. But it's such a great, great performance. Mm. It's just brilliant.
It's so, as we sort of constantly say, some of the best performances, these understated performance and his, I guess he's like his slightly cartoonish character with the mumbling to himself and stuff like that, but it's so vulnerable and meek, and it's just it's like someone just being fucking tapped on the head and this guy's going to explode. But like, yeah, is the constant we've been asked to move the desk is the one, like a short time in an office there was always that fucking thing. It was just like, oh no, they're going to move the fucking desk again. I've got the perfect desk and my screen's not facing the fucking bosses. I could just go into solitaire, you know, blah, blah, blah. Back in the day, this is fucking great. And it's like, no, your screen is facing the door of the fucking manager's office or something. It's just like, oh, for fuck's sake. So, yeah. But his little mumbles are just wonderful. It's just like, but I already moved my desk. You told me last time I'm not going to move my desk.
And he's just like that, the mumbling, oh, I'm going to have to set fire to the place. You know, it's just real, as you said, it's real, just mumbling it, whispering it. And it's just, like, I don't think I've seen a bad performance from Stephen Root. Like, when he's in something, if I see his name on the credits, you know, when I'm looking on the beat to see who's in the movie, if you see his, you're just like, fucking nice one. You know, you know you're going to get a cracking performance out of it. He just brings something excellent just to his small, small roles. You know, I was watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine recently where he's playing... he's playing Boyle's dad, and he's in it a few episodes, and he's just fucking excellent. You know, when he can play the kind of serious vibe too, you think of him in Get Out and stuff. You know, he's got great range. He's so enjoyable to watch, and this character is just iconic. You know?
And it's very well acted as well. You know, it's not just the butt of a joke or something. It's that scene when Peter asks him just to turn down the radio just a tiny bit, and he just, well, I was told I could keep the radio at an optimal level or whatever. It's just this back and forth. He's just like, just turn it down a little bit. And I said, well, I was told I just, it's like, right, what the fuck?
That's what I said. Like 100% today, he'd be diagnosed with something, spectrum or something along those lines. But they don't push it. They don't push it to take the piss out of him. You know, he's never the actual butt of the joke, if you know what I mean. You know, he's still... No one in the office, the people that actually can talk to him and stuff, they don't treat him, like, apart from Gary Buchholz and stuff, don't really care about him, but he's not treated mean on purpose, like, you fucking stuttering dickhead or anything along those lines. He's just treated as this person who's in the way, you know what I mean? No one really cares about.
Who shouldn't be working there.
Who shouldn't be working there, exactly. He fired fucking 5 years ago.
What did they say? The middleman guys, John C. McGinley, just like, yeah, we just stopped his payment and hopefully... That'll be that. He'll just go away now. They avoid conflict. They're not going to talk to him. Just like, no, he'll just go away. Fuck.
And he ends up staying working there and just doesn't realize. He just keeps asking where his paycheck is. And they just keep giving him jobs to do, despite the fact that he's fired. He's not getting paid. And they're still moving him around desks. Like, he ends up in the basement at one point. But like, when Peter's in one of these meetings with the two Bobs, he gets told that they're going to plan on firing Michael Bolton and Samir. And they come up with a plan then. He's like, okay, Michael Bolton, at the start of the movie, he could create a virus, put it into the system. And he goes, look, it's just like Superman 3, where the virus goes in and it takes off. It does all these things normally round up. So it'll take off, you know, a couple of cents off each transaction or whatever it is. And it rounds it up and down. All that money together, it could equal hundreds of thousands. And so he says to him, he goes, look, you're getting fired. Why don't we put a plan into place to do this? We leave our jobs, and then in a couple of years' time, we're all sitting on a few hundred grand, and it's going to happen so gradually that they won't notice, and we'll be sitting pretty on a few hundred grand. What do you think? And so they kind of go, fuck it, like, let's do it, because, you know, they're going to get fired anyway.
Yeah.
And this is when we get that awesome scene with the printer, because they go out of the office and he's just like, I took something else, and they pull it out into the middle of nowhere, and he's got the fucking thing in the car, the printer, and he takes it out, and it's in slow motion, and it's just
fantastic.
The passion in their face when they're smashing this up, and still the Ghetto Boys is playing in the background, and yeah, he's been fucking held back, pulled off as if like,
he's had enough
kind of thing, and he's just fucking trying to stamp on it. And actually, like, Peter doesn't even smash the printer, because
no.
At this point he's still so calm about everything.
Yeah.
It's more something for his friends, you know.
That so release of anger is just phenomenal.
It's all in slow mo, and it's just fucking, and actually the hip hop soundtrack to this movie is actually great and
pretty good.
Unexpected. You know, I'm not sure you would expect it from a predominantly white cast office space kind of movie. Like, it is literally an office space movie, but it's not something you expect, but it works really well, I think. So he kind of, the first time he kind of starts to come around to maybe it's a bad idea, is like he's convinced that he's doing the right thing. But then one day Jennifer Aniston tells him she thinks the plan is wrong. It's the same as her stealing from the register and work. Like, that's what you're doing, but you've convinced yourself that these are the enemy and that it's okay, when really you're still just stealing. And then later on that day, one of the dickheads from the office tells him that she had slept with Gary Cole's character. And this is kind of the start of a meltdown, where he comes out of that feeling super, super calm, and he starts to have fucking bad dreams about it, about fucking the kind of person that he is and the fact that they could go to prison. And that gets further increased because they find out that the plan goes wrong when they go to check their bank balance in that account that they're using, and it finds out that there's hundreds of thousands in it. Yeah. So Michael Bolton had made a mistake writing the program, and rather than it being spread out over years, they've all of a sudden just given themselves 300 and something grand of the company's money.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny, all the panic and trying to get rid of it, the stuff with Orlando Jones. And it's a great kind of part in the movie, that switch back to, I don't really care about anything, to back into, holy shit, what can I do to make this right?
Yeah, we're fucked.
It's really, really good. And then Peter decides that he wants to kind of cop to the whole thing, just do the right thing. And he's like, I'll take the blame for the two lads. They shouldn't lose their job for my idea. I came up with it when I was super hypno-relaxed. So they write checks for all the money that it's owed, and a confession letter, and he leaves it under the door of the office. And then he has a last minute regret and tries to get it back, but the letter's too far under the door. So he just leaves. And the next day he's kind of packs his bags and tells Jennifer Aniston that he's probably going to end up going to jail. But then when he arrives to the office, we get a thing from the day that morning where Milton has wandered into the office. He opens the door looking for a stapler, and we see him standing on the letter. We don't see him picking it up or anything. He just wanders around and his stapler is gone. And then by the time we get to the office with Ron Livingston, the whole place is after being burnt down. It's been set on fire. And Ron Livingston looks home for it. He can just see Milton's looking all shuffly, and Milton muttering under his breath. And then he just kind of runs off. And it's just, okay, it's a happy ending to it, you know, because you're kind of, okay, it's not the exact ending, but it's kind of, was wondering what would happen. Would it end up with them going to prison? Would they end up taking the money in the end, or what would happen? And obviously I've seen it before, but the first time I just wasn't sure. And I think it was a cool way of ending it. Like, he goes off and takes a job in construction, and he's happy doing this work with his hands outdoors and stuff. And he's a lot more at peace doing that than he was cooped up in an office. And then we get Milton's happy ending. And the guy who's been pushed around for the entire movie, his stapler's being taken. He's had his desk moved. He's treated like just a fucking piece of the furniture that no one gives a shit about. And we see him sitting on the beach, and he's holding a fucking cocktail in his hand.
Yeah,
and obviously he's taken the money and taken the 300 grand, but he's still the same guy. The guy comes over to, he calls the waiter over, and he's still muttering, I asked for no salt in my drink, and I still put salt in my drink, and I'm going to have to talk to the management about this, and da 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 da.
That's great.
And then it's just, and that's just kind of, that's the end of the movie. Did you say you saw this when it came out, or did you see it afterwards?
Just about a year after. I think it was on VHS when it came out. Can't remember it.
Okay, great.
In cinemas over here at all. Yeah, VHS. And then again,
and so
it wasn't a few years until it came out in DVD then, 2004 or something.
And what's your kind of, what is your overall take on it? Because I know I flew through it because, first of all, it's an hour and a half movie. You know, I spent as much long in this as I did on Green Mile. So it was a 3-hour movie.
Yeah.
So it's there's a lot of fun things to chat about in there, but I'd love to know what your overall thoughts were on rewatching it.
It's just great. It stands the test of time, I think. It's still relevant. It doesn't, jokes don't age, you know, if you know what I mean. Like Milton's character, as I said, it does seem a bit more like a caricature, but he still hits all the right notes. But it's like as a movie, it's fantastic. But it's the first, it's that first hour that I could watch over and over and over and over. Obviously, they need to give the plot something with their plan to get the money and everything. But it's just such a great depiction of fucking dehumanizing, fucking demeaning workplace. And that torturous office workplace or toxic workplace in the case of this movie. But yeah, the acting is just fantastic. It's funny. It's laugh out loud funny, like the printer moment and like Michael Bolton. It's all this understated humor. It's not comedians playing up, you know, playing up a scene or anything like that. It's just situational comedy. They're just presenting something that is not far-fetched in any way, shape, or form. It's just like you know these characters. You've met these characters before.
100%.
In not just office work, but any work, whether it's fucking, office, retail, or fucking anything. Like, and the stuff that they have to spout, like the TPS report and these kind of things. Like, I've made videos for some large companies and some of the shit their managers write for them to say on camera is fucking shocking. You know what I mean? I come to work and assess how I can tackle my must-win battles or something, and you're just like we spoke about cults and stuff last year at Fight Club, and you're just looking at these guys going, are they any fucking?
But I always wonder with those people if they believe it. Like, I'm same as you. I'm watching the show, and we're saying you'd all go, "Oh, that one who's the secretary, he was just putting people on hold, and the really annoying voice, or how the fucking office birthday party is done with a cake and all the rest of it." And it's just this awkward, no one really wants, no one cares. Like, it's just, we've all been there, as you say. We've all had those kind of, we've all had those characters. But I always wonder about those people who are in management, who see everything is so important. These minutiae of these details of this report and procedure has to be followed. They were all lower down like everybody else at the start. You know, what is it that puts, when people get to a certain point, do they buy into all this fucking bullshit?
Yeah.
And it's the same. Every office. It's not an office you've
been brainwashed.
I'm sure even Google and Facebook have it as well. But I imagine there's not a normal office you can go into that doesn't have its version of, we're going to do this thing to increase productivity and get everybody to buy into the company's fucking mission statement. I'm telling you now, anybody who's listening to this who happens to be a manager, no one cares about your mission statement.
No.
Nobody cares. Nobody gives a shit. Nobody,
it's like that banner.
Give everybody more, just give everybody an extra day's holidays and they'll be over the moon. Yeah. They'll fucking love you for it.
It's like the banner they have up at one point in it when they're giving the talk, they're introducing the guys that are going to cut costs and whatever. It says like, is this good for the company or something? And it's just that kind of stuff that it's not just in a memo. It's like, it's hung up in the fucking office. And
it's
that age old thing before, you know, you'd get maybe bonuses or performance thing bonuses or whatever. But it's like, you want me to work harder, faster, for no gain to me, just so you can make more fucking money. Why the fuck? Fuck off.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, you know, you just get stuck in a rut.
Don't you want to take pride in our wonderful company?
Yeah.
No. I want
Show
you to
me a bit of love,
more.
Maybe like, I will, you know?
And like a bit more of that, actually, when you say the background, is there's a whiteboard in the background of one of the scenes, and it looks really complicated. It's got fucking graphs and pie charts and all that kind of stuff on it. And it literally just says, planning to plan on it. You know, it's just like, fuck's sake, like, you know, it's just these different fucking levels, having a meeting about a meeting, you know, having a meeting that could have been an email, you know, sign off, and then it's just, it really plays that so well. And what's great is that this is only the length of two episodes of your regular favorite TV show. You know, it's only an hour and a half long. Is that what they could have done is really, really played into more and more, making it really mundane, really hammering that home. But they're really selective at how they show it. And they show enough. They know people have experienced this. They show enough of it to already give you that horrible office fucking mundane vibe without having to make you sit in it. You know what I mean? It's just now, like, all you need is fucking the bit at the start to show you how fucking shit office life is. We all know. We've all had these particular bosses, this particular shit day in, this monotony. I think it's great that they've managed to put in the whole arc in an hour and a half. It doesn't feel too short. It doesn't feel too long. Yeah. it's so satisfying, I think, for me at 90 minutes.
Yeah, and I think that just shows the qualities of Mike Judge and his screenwriting abilities, that it's not based off test screenings or something, just like, oh, that was a bit too much, take this out, whatever. He knows exactly how much to put in to get you just irked enough by the office stuff to not make it kind of like, all right, you've said that joke again, you know. Gets to the point, he knows he can make the Michael Bolton joke a few times, and it still gets good laughs, and it's not like, oh, they're using that joke again, whereas some other movies you use a joke once and it's wrong. He just likes a shit joke, but I think he just nails the script, knows exactly, he knows exactly where the viewer is and how they're going to take it. Like, it's fantastic. I couldn't believe I watched it like two nights ago or Sunday night, and just how it stood the test of time, and all the movies that, like Green Mile, Fight Club, how much they have stood the test of time, and nothing really, like something like, you think of something like this, where situational comedy in an office in 1999, probably written, you know, a few years earlier than that, could be even 28, 29, 30 years from when he actually wrote the screenplay to get it made. But yeah, that it stands the test of time, that it's just like, this plays exactly fucking, you could just say to update a few things, and you could re-release it, and people go, fucking hell, that's exactly like the shithole I work in, you know.
And I know people get that from the modern like Ricky Gervais's and the Steve Carell is that kind of mockumentary style stuff.
Absolutely.
But I just, this was the first one. It's not that style. It's not aimed at real life. It's not supposed to look like a documentary. It's just,
there's no one really funny in it. There's no one being funny in it. People are just, the scenario and the character is just funny. They're not playing it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Which works as well, you know, for The Office and lots of other stuff. But with this, it's just, it's brave and kind of confident that way, where it's just like, this is how I see it, and I think it's funny, and I hope you do too. Or he almost goes, I know you will, which is fucking great. Like,
yeah. Well, I hope anybody listening who hasn't seen it, go and check it out. And if you have, watch it again. It's on Disney Plus at the moment. So go ahead and watch it and check it out. But so for that's it for this week's movie revisit.
Hey, thanks, Phil. That was a lovely retreading of a classic movie. So now onto the retro corner. It is the 1999 banger that is Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. So extreme sports games, I guess, hadn't exactly taken the world by storm before this game. You know, you had Excitebike in 1984, which I vaguely remember playing on the NES, but I do remember playing like 720, which was a NES skateboarding game, which was like, blew my mind at the time. It's not very good, but like, there was a load of piss poor rollerblade games and BMX games that followed throughout the early 90s. On the PlayStation 1, Cool Borders came out towards the end in the 90s, and then 1080 Snowboarding had come out in the N64. But then, apart from those notable releases in 1999, this game changed pretty much everything, changed the landscape. And when Activision announced that they had signed Tony Hawk to not only star in, but like help produce the skateboarding game, and that's a big aspect of it, he was heavily involved in that, you just knew this would be something special, or at very least something different to the norm, or some of the shit that had come before it. This game changed the skater gaming scene forever, and essentially redefined the extreme sports genre, opening the door for a multitude of games afterwards, like Dave Mirra, BMX, and some other bits and bobs, some good, some bad. But definitely in terms of sales, a lot more quality stuff got put into production. It decided to take an arcade control scheme and apply it, given a wide range of complex moves and combos. And the version I remember is the N64 version. It did, and that actually came out in March 2000. So it's just like, well, technically it's not 1999, because it was a port. It was a port of the PS1 game.
Yeah,
I didn't play that. But funnily enough, like the N64 version, even though it was a port of the PS1 and it was a more powerful console, it ran a bit better frame rate wise, but didn't look as good as the PS1, which is I thought was odd. I was watching some comparison videos, which is quite interesting. But yeah, the physics were great. It wasn't quite a sim, and it wasn't quite fully arcade either. It was kind of sitting somewhere in the middle, so it, it didn't hold your hand too much. It was, it had open world locations. Well, I say open world, you could skate around various locations from all over America. You could pick from 10 skaters on unlocking new locations as you progress. And I think the best thing about this was the mission design and the way it was put forth, where you had to basically collect like 5 videotapes on each level. You could, there were a number of ways to do this, by collecting hard to reach letters and skating over certain difficult locations, completing other tricky tasks or achieving high scores. But the best thing is you had 2 minutes to do it. So at the start of every run, you decide what you're going to try and do. And start the run, you're like, right, I'm going to collect the 5 letters, skate letters. And then you miss the S and you're just like, ah, oh, fuck, you know, and you start again. And there was, I don't remember that there being, there like there was a 2-player multiplayer in this, but when I remember playing it, it was just simply just let somebody have their go because it's just 2 minutes. And then it's, you know, that proper kind of couch, not even couch co-op, or more couch pass the controller. You could have 4 or 5 people and yeah, just passing the controller around. You have a go, you have a go, tackling high scores. Do you remember this game back in the day?
Yeah, but I haven't played it in 20 years. Like what I remember from yeah, this one and the second one is the fun, like this, the soundtrack. Like I wasn't even a big new metal kind of guy, but the soundtrack suited this game so well. Mm. You know, anybody who's a fan of the likes of fucking Blink-182 or Sum 41 yeah, yeah, or any of these kind of bands,
great grunge soundtrack.
Yeah, people just fucking absolutely loved the soundtrack to this. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Like I remember just being when you finally got the hang of the balance feature, you know, when you go along to grinding something in the middle of the board and you finally get to getting the balance thing right, was so fucking satisfying when you started being able to nail it, you know, routinely nail it rather than just fucking, you know, almost leaning over with the controller. Yeah. Like it was just when you could start getting it properly and then you're linking up, you know, ramps and stuff. I don't know any skateboarding terms, but you're going fucking up like whatever.
Throwing it, nollie.
Ollies and kick flips or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
When you start being able to link these things together, as you said, to get up to higher spots or to get your high score up, it was such a super chill out game to be able to play, to just pick it up for a couple of minutes, have a quick run. You know, the skate park is a very finite space, so it's not as if it's a fucking race that's going to last you forever. So you just mess around and pass it on.
And like they had, there was a good mix of, let's say, not so much puzzling, but there were aspects of it when you were skating around that you'd look up and see a fucking rail, you know, off the side of a top of a building, and you're just like, how the fuck am I going to get up there? You know, so there's a bit of exploration. Do you spend your 2 minutes just trying to figure out how to get up onto top of that building? But like the controls were that beautiful mix of easy to pick up, but hard to master. So you could pick up and play, do a few kickflips and go around the place. But as you say, when you start to begin to master the controls and could effortlessly like link grinds into manuals and then, you know, kickflips and fucking half pipe aerial shit, it's just phenomenal. And then you definitely enter like an almost flow like state, just like Zed, like you just like, you can see shit before it happens. Just like, I'm going to grind that over there. I'm going to wall right over there. It's just fucking, it's just brilliant. And then, but there was a lovely like risk and reward to it as well, because if you wanted to try one of the challenges, which is, you know, get 50,000 high score or something like that, you know, you've got your 2 minutes, and if you start well, you know, you don't want to fuck it up. So you're kind of going, right, well, I could beat my previous score. If I go up here, instead of doing a 720, I could throw in one more twist and try and land it. And then you just smack your head off the side of a fucking park bench and you just wipe out, and that's the end of your run. So, it was a smash hit when it came out, and a sequel was pushed out just the following year, which is incredible. And as sequels go, holy fucking smokes. Like this is like going back to Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 is great, but Pro Skater 2 is where my memories go straight back to. And it's obviously came out the next year, but that game improved everything in every conceivable way. And it's probably easily my top 10 games of all time. I played that game so fucking much. Everything was prettier, bigger, smoother. They added that skate park creator, which ate up eons of fucking time. I remember at one point just
making a figure eight loop with just railings all around it and just go in and there's no time limit and just skate around the thing for fucking hours. Like, just go, what are you doing with your life? You know, skate around this fucking thing. But yeah.
I wonder how much money he made off it.
Oh, fucking
Tony Hawk.
A bazillion. Like, it's, because it's still going, but like, yeah. Like, it didn't really get better than that, but like Tony Hawk 3 then came out in 2001. That was another, I think it's rated the second best in the franchise. It was good, you know, the graphics are updated and all that, but that did give you the possibility to go around as Wolverine or Darth Maul on a skateboard as a secret character, yeah. Twisting your double-edged lightsaber. Like, doesn't really get, that's one of the top gaming moments and fucking living memory there, man. And I'll just spin through another few because it's quite remarkable that they were churning out these games every fucking year. Like, every year, Tony Hawk's 3 2001, Tony Hawk's 4 2002, then Underground in 2003. And this is where Neversoft, the developers, decided to add a narrative element. And I remember this. You can get off the board and walk around and talk to people and get missions. And so I started kind of tuning out this at this stage. Yeah. There were far better games that had narrative elements. You just didn't really need to do that. Do you remember that kind of shit? It started just going down a different path.
I didn't even play that one, but just when you're talking about it, that's not what I think of when I pick one I want a game like this. Man, like this,
pick up and play.
SXX, those kind of games. Yeah. I just want to pick it up, fucking tear down the hill and find the fucking tricks and just want to make it look cool. I don't need, it's the same with racing games. I don't play a massive amount of racing games, but I don't need the side story about. I
don't need a story mode. Yeah.
Thing. No, I just want to get in and race the fucking car or fucking race to do the tricks on the skateboard. I don't need anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. There was various releases then, pretty much every year, and sometimes multiple entries in a year. As there was versions on the Nintendo handhelds, but I do remember Project 8 or Tony Hawk's Project 8 in 2006. They attempted to change the control systems for the first time. Just said, this thing that's been working for, you know, the last fucking 7 years, let's change it and fix it up. And it didn't go down well. And people said, fuck no, no thanks. But then the only other notable entry, really, and I don't know if you remember this coming out, Tony Hawk's Ride came out in 2009, but it came out with the fucking skateboard peripheral. Do you remember that thing? It came out with a skateboard you stand on that just like, would apparently it's like being on a real board, man. It's like,
yeah, I
remember trying it in fucking game or something, just like fucking almost snapped myself, just like this is not gonna go well, you know. And you definitely somebody somewhere had a field day in a pitch meeting and came up with this, and everyone's just like, yeah, that's a great idea. It's like, no fucking thanks. But yeah, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5 was a little kind of last one, 2015, but it was the trajectory was going down with review scores, you know, for the 6, 7, 8 years coming up to that. And then in 2020, Tony Hawk's 1 and 2 remasters were released, and they were widely lauded for their gorgeous graphics and updated controls, and it was just a glorious package. And that is possibly the definitive version now that they've put those first two games. It would have been great if they did the 1, 2, and 3 just to that initial trilogy, but those two games, that remaster is fucking phenomenal. So if anyone wants to pick it up for a bit of retro action, these classic games, that's the way to go. Pick up the 1 and 2 remasters. So on that note, we will finish up this week's episode. That was a nice trip back to Office Space, Phil. It was hugely enjoyable.
Yeah, it was good fun to have a chat about that.
Yeah, it's nice. Next week, we'll be into the final episode of our Party Like It's 1999 series. I'll be taking us back to Choose the Red Pill and venture deep into The Matrix, and the movie that I think raised the bar for action movies and defining moment in not only action movies, but cinema as a whole in my book. And is your game going to be a secret?
No, I actually haven't picked it because I was... thinking back to what games I was playing in 99, there was nothing really else that really grabbed my fancy. Like I know it might sound sacrilege to some people, but I didn't really enjoy Final Fantasy VIII. So I don't know. I'm going to have a look back and see what came out that year, and I'll pick something between this week and next week and possibly replay it and have a bit of a chat about it. But I will find something for our wee retro corner. Don't worry.
Deadly beans. So yeah, on that note, that's a wrap. Please keep the feedback coming.
email us at middleagedgeeks@yahoo.com. Keep following us on socials. Give us a like and share. Anything else from yourself, Philly?
No, just everything you're saying. Yeah, keep on liking, sharing, commenting, all that good stuff. And yeah, we look forward to keep grinding out at least one more of these classics. Can't wait to talk about The Matrix. Yeah. Cannot wait.
It'll be a banger. All right. So from me, Daz, and from Phil, that is a wrap. See you later.